You have 17 voice messages. First voice message.
What's going on, dude? You son of a bitch.
You can't stop it.
I just said every day.
End of message.
I got a big plan. Big idea, bro. Big idea.
Message erased.
What are you trying to say?
I'm so into you.
I really don't really care.
What?
Next message.
We're still here. Look at my cat.
Get off the cat.
You son of a bitch.
Enjoy it.
ODG, Occupy Dave and Giggles.
Where's that?
I got two turntables and a microphone.
Where's that?
End of message.
I got two turntables and a microphone.
Where's that?
Next message.
I got two turntables and a microphone.
Seriously, guys, four.
You know we do a radio show, right?
I just want to say that we never claim to be a comedy show. We just entertain.
You son of a bitch. I'm freaking out. Freaking out.
End of message.
You look so good right now, you son of a bitch.
Next message.
Talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Get in touch. We got to talk about it.
Horrible. Give us a call. 646-915-9228.
DaveandGiggles.blogspot.com.
That's what it is. Give me a chant you want to lead.
Dave and Giggles.
Dave and Giggles.
Got to go big. Really big.
Hi, Pete Pigeon here, Colorado Sound in Denver, recording some overdubs for my new record, All the Little Things, and taking a minute here to pay tribute to the Grateful Dead. The GD50 show is coming up, and thanks to Jam Bass for putting this together. Thanks to Billy and Mickey and Phil and Bobby and Robert, and especially Jerry, for your inspiration. This is a tune about a man who's had a hard life and still believes that he can get back on his feet and get it back together again. It's a tune here called Wharf Rat.
By the docks of the city, blind and dirty, he asked me for a dime for a cup of coffee. Well, I got no dime, but I've got some time to hear his story. My name is August West, and I love my Pearly Baker best more than my wine. My wine. And more than my maker, though he's no friend of mine. Well, everyone says I knew I wouldn't pearly believe them. And half of my life, well, I spent doing time for some motherfucker's crime. And the other half found me stumbling around, drunk on burgundy wine. someday. The good Lord willing, if he says I may, well, I know that the I'll get a new start. And live the life I should.
Right. I am Dave, and Giggles is not in the house, but Giggles has set us up with a replacement for him, which I think Pete, I think we're gonna just leave Giggles at it from now on. You're just gonna do the show every week.
Sounds good to me, man. The pay is great.
Yeah, the pay is real great. So we got Pete Pigeon in kind of studio, but he's in L.A. He's in Hollywood, West Hollywood, if I'm not mistaken. Correct?
Something like that. It's sort of on the border of West Hollywood, Hollywood, and Hollywood Hills West.
Okay.
There's no consensus.
Like, there's no consensus.
If you look on Google, if you look on the L.A. County map, if you look on any other map, all the neighborhoods are kind of confusing. So
they are
basically at the foot of Runyon Canyon, put it that way.
Oh, well, that's a good spot to be. That's a great spot to be. I'll probably come out within the next like year or so. When I do, we'll hang out, drink some beers. We'll play some music together. It'll be a grand old time.
That'd be great, man. Yeah. Then we can do the podcast in one spot.
Perfect. So last week, this is a story for you and the listeners, because you have not heard the story, and it was a very exciting story for me.
So last week, we didn't do the show live. We ran a replay. It was because at the last minute, I got a ticket to go to the dress rehearsal friends and family show for Us and Them Roger Waters tour.
That's kind of cool.
It was really cool. And it was like such a show. Like at one point, they drop these screens in the middle of the theater, in the middle of the arena that we were, and it creates it does a lot of stuff, but eventually it creates the animals. It's got the pipes going up. It's got the whole thing. It's like there's a pig flying around. It's immensely amazing. His players are phenomenal. It was just so amazing. So they end the show. This is where the story gets fun. They end the show, and there wasn't that many people there. There was only a couple thousand people there, and we were in like a huge arena. They rented out an arena just for a dress rehearsal, and then they were off. Okay. They didn't play there at all. They just did it as a dress rehearsal. It was amazing. It was amazing. And so halfway through, we go up and into the seats, and we're just getting a good view of the entire thing because it's enormous. The amount of like art they put into this is unbelievable. Turn myself down a little bit. So at the end, there's these things that kind of rise up from the middle of the audience, and it creates this laser prism, and then it creates the whole Dark Side of the Moon like cover in the middle of the arena, right? It's amazing. These lasers create a prism, and then they shine like a white light through it, and then it turns into the, you know, obviously all the prism colors, and it's in the middle of the arena, just on top of everybody. So I took a picture of it, and I was like, this is too good not to post. So I posted it up on Instagram, and like a whole bunch of my friends started liking it. And then eventually I saw someone say, "Yo, dude." And I had no idea who this person was. He said, "Yo, dude, Roger Waters just reposted your picture."
Yeah.
I mean, you can't get better than that.
That's a win.
Yeah,
that's
a win. It's a win. It's a win. So
that's the kind of special perks you get for working Dave and Giggles, you know?
Exactly. We got in for Dave and Giggles, and Roger was like, "Listen, I got to give Dave and Giggles a shout out, and they got to be known.
Because they're the best podcast in the world."
Sure. If you want to say that.
Why isn't Roger Waters on today? We could do a co-podcast.
We could. I'll give him a call. I think he's in, I saw today that he's on tour now, and they're in, it was like Kansas or somewhere in the South, like St. Louis or something, which is really interesting because 99% of his show is founded in hatred of Trump, right? the whole thing is like so much based, like especially after the set break, they come back and they play a lot of animals, which is like geared towards Trump, if you know animals. And they play all this animals, and it's just like images of Trump, and then like... Throughout the entire arena, images of things he said that sound stupid. Like, it's just like a huge Trump slam because Roger Waters despises the man. So he's going to go all out of his way. And he's always been relatively political. Like, animals is all about politics.
Sure.
So he's always into that. So I'm really interested to see how that show plays down south. Like, are they going to boo him? Are they going to like stand behind him? Or it'd be interesting to see the reaction, you know?
Definitely. Right. And where was the arena thing?
We were in Jersey. We were like right by, there's like a small little theater or arena right next to where the Giants play, the MetLife.
Yeah. The Meadowlands.
Meadowlands. I think it's Izod Theater or Izod Arena. Right. We saw them in there, and they like closed half of it off. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they closed half of it off, and then they only played to one half of the stadium. Super cool. Yeah, it was super cool.
Yeah, that was probably the worst sounding arena I'd ever been to when it was the Brendan Byrne.
Oh, I believe it.
It was horrible. They always said the New Haven Coliseum was the worst, but I think it was the Brendan Byrne. It was terrible.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
I think they've rebuilt it. Actually, I saw the Love for Levon Helm, Love for Levon show there.
Nice.
The tribute concert. It was much better.
I believe it. So also one thing before we get into it, because I want to talk about Levon, obviously, because that's amazing. But
his birthday was.
His birthday.
Yesterday, day before yesterday.
Yeah, he would have been. What would he have been? 70 something.
74.
74.
I'd have to look it up.
Miss the man.
Remember.
Miss the man. But they also had five, I think it was Dolby Surround at the show, at the Roger Waters show. They're doing total surround at the show, which was amazing. It was just
right
surreal. At set break, you know, I'm sitting in the bleachers just like hanging out. And all of a sudden you heard like a couple sirens going off and they're kind of like shooting around you. And like it's just starting off really light. And then as the set break increases, getting closer to the set two, everything starts to ramp up to a giant riot. And as the riot really takes form, they get back on stage and start Animals. It's just
right,
it was so surreal. It was so cool. It was definitely really cool.
He's been touring the wall though, right? Now
he toured the wall before. Yeah, he toured the wall before, and now he's doing an Us and Them, which is kind of like he's playing.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's playing a lot of Animals. He's got a new album, so he's playing a couple off of that, which is funny because it's like it's pretty much exactly like the final cut. It's very similar to the final cut.
Right.
You know, it's really funny. But let's,
that's good to hear, though. I mean, I love The Wall, and he did a great job with it, but he's been going on for so long that it's, you know, you want to see something different.
Right.
So exactly. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully he comes to Hollywood Bowl or
yeah, he is going to be out there. He is going to be out there. So you should totally go see it. It's definitely worth the light show, at least that.
I bet.
It's pretty amazing.
I mean, that's what Pink Floyd was always known for.
Exactly.
I had a ticket to see them on the Division Bell tour.
Oh, nice.
And
you must have been pretty young for that.
I was young, and the ticket then, which would have been, I don't, what year would that have been? 80,
was like,
80,
no, the Division Bell was like 93.
93? Okay, yeah, my bad.
Yeah, no, yeah.
And back then, the ticket was $100.
Jesus.
So with inflation, I don't know what
that
would have
been
out,
like $450.
Like $1 million.
Yeah, $1 million. Pretty much $1 million, Pete.
And, you know, for a young kid, I didn't have that kind of money.
No.
So I was like, oh, that's cool. I'll just see him on next tour. And then that was the last tour.
Yeah, that was the only, I think the only tour they did. Oh, we got a call. This will be interesting.
Oh, nice.
Caller, you're on. What's happening?
What's happening? It's Giggles.
Hey,
how
it's
are
Giggles.
You?
What's what up?
Oh, you called to ruin the show.
We were flowing so nice. What happened? What's going on,
man.
Buddy? Where are you?
Oh, hey, bud.
I'm going out to the car to get a protein bar and a, energy drink. I got a couple hours left of the wedding.
Nice.
So I got to have my little snack. It's a good, take a little break, you know?
All right. Nice. So you're missing the show because you're shooting a wedding. Is it a nice wedding or is it like a...
beautiful.
It's a beautiful wedding.
Beautiful. There's attractive people. Everybody's young. Everybody's happy. The weather's gorgeous. It's like 72 degrees in Colorado.
Sounds nice.
This is gorgeous.
Oh, wow.
Gorgeous. Yeah.
Sounds
nice.
Really nice. I mean, this is
how you guys doing?
This is our second week of not doing a show together.
I know.
You know? How do you feel about that? You've been calling me all week being like, we need to show.
You're just hedging that maybe I'd have to take over, man.
Yeah, I'm thinking Pete might have to take over.
The Dave and Pete show.
The Dave and Pete show.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's got a nice ring to it.
The Dave and Pigeon show. I think that's what it'll be. And he says the pay is really good, so there's that.
Yeah, pay's great. I don't know if the listeners realize that how well you guys get paid, but it's pretty impressive.
It's impressive. I know. We try to keep it hush-hush because we don't want people coming knocking on our door. But
yeah, you don't want to offend the advertisers and the
exactly,
sponsors.
Exactly.
No.
You don't want to let them know that you're actually pocketing all that money.
Exactly.
All right.
Oh, man.
Well, listen, I'm going to get my protein bar. I'm going to go back to the wedding.
All right.
Because I can't be getting paid to talk to you, bozo.
Oh, jeez. Are you at dinner right now, or is this like a break, or what?
Guests are going to be seated in like 15 minutes. So once that's done, then I'm coming to see you, buddy. Coming to see you. Hey, let me know if you're going to lock the top lock, because then
I didn't lock the top lock. So you should be good, but the key is there in case Chris comes home. But he went down to Pennsylvania. Won't be back till like tomorrow night. So you should be good.
All right.
But I'll let you know. You're good. He's coming to visit me. The kid visits me like every other week now. It's really like I got no like free time anymore because when he comes, I just have to like dedicate my life to like entertaining him, which is fine.
True.
But it's just like he's needy. He's Giggles.
Super needy.
He needs a bed. He needs clean sheets. He needs a nice pillow. He's so needy, you know?
They won't be clean for
long.
I need
it all,
man.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. All right. Go do your
all
thing.
Right, you
call back
good.
Call
Peace.
Back at dinner if you want.
Hey,
I will.
Thanks
I will.
For calling,
thanks
caller.
For, thanks for being Dave's co-host today. So I appreciate
it. My pleasure, man. Enjoy the good weather.
All right. I'll talk to you guys soon. Right. Maybe I'll get the groom to call in.
Cool.
Ciao.
Do it.
That'd be great.
All get right. the bride to call in. That's who we want to talk to.
Yeah, she'd love it.
Yeah.
All right.
Later, talk to you later.
Good to hear from you, bro.
All right. That was nice of him.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. All right. So
he keeps his job.
Let's get into the history of Pete Pidgeon, which is enormous and immense and really fucking cool. So I think this last Grammys you were nominated, right?
I was on the first round ballot.
That's pretty cool.
Technical nomination means that you're in the top five.
Got it.
I was in the top like 120.
That's pretty great. And then it was for your last album, right?
Yeah, it was for my most recent record called All the Little Things.
That's really cool. And that's the one that Levon played on?
That's right. He's actually on two. He was on my first record, At First Sight. And then we did another tune on that session that didn't get released, which right. was a cover of Bob Dylan's Tonight I'll Be Staying Here With You.
So awesome.
And I didn't want to put a cover on my first record because sure. I was afraid that the cover would get all the attention and it would ignore all my songwriting and
sure.
stuff.
Sure, makes sense.
The whole point of making the record.
Right.
So,
put it on your sophomore record.
Then I came to this record, which is all Americana music.
Sure.
Kind of revisiting that sound. And it was just the perfect tune to fit into it.
I mean,
and it took 5 years to make, so he had actually died in the process of making the record, and
crazy.
It was pretty big. So it finally has come out, and he's on there.
That's really cool. So how was it? You went over there. He was up in the Catskills, right? Like pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, he was in Woodstock.
Woodstock.
He's got a nice house there on a lake with a barn and a recording studio.
So awesome.
And he was doing the Rambles, the Midnight Rambles there, which originally were to help him cover some rent.
Right. And his medical costs, right? He had a lot of medical costs towards the end.
Yeah, medical problems. He had some IRS problems. Ugh. And there was a time there before he got his new record contract with Vanguard and started putting out, you know, Grammy Award winning records
yeah.
and, you know, playing Bonnaroo and getting his game back. He was in some really, really tough times. So he would have these rambles that would help him, you know, cover the bills and whatnot. And then that gained him more attention.
Sure.
And then that slowly ramped up into becoming the top of the rock again.
That's really cool. So then you got you pretty much, how'd you get in touch with him to like set up the show or recording?
He was playing a concert at SUNY New Paltz, the
okay.
University of New York at New Paltz, sure. which is where I went to school.
Is that why you have an A45 area code, which is
yes,
my hometown?
Exactly, yeah.
That's my hometown up there.
Oh, yeah. Where are you from?
I'm from Carmel, which is like just
yeah.
a little south of Poughkeepsie. Yeah. That's
Carmel,
A45.
Yeah.
yeah. That's my right. old stomping grounds.
So, you know, New Paltz.
I do. I played up there with my band a lot in like post-college years.
Was that Snug Harbor?
Yeah.
Or,
I played
Cabalooses,
Oasis. I played all those places.
McGillicuddy's.
Yeah. I never played McGillicuddy's. It was just mostly Cabalooses, Snugs, and Oasis. Like those
yeah,
were the three.
Yeah. Those were the three.
Yeah.
There's a couple other ones that have opened up since then. But,
yeah, that's cool. One of my favorite shows of up there that we did was we went up there to practice, and my friend at the time lived above Cabalooses. He like had a rented apartment
I know
above
that
Cabalooses.
Apartment.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'm sure it's a musician swinging apartment, you know. And
yeah,
we got there, and the guy who was running Cabalooses saw us like pulling our guitars in, and he's like, "Hey, you want a show tonight?" And we were like, "Yeah, we were just gonna practice. Might as well practice at the bar." And he was like, "Yeah, go ahead." So we went and played the entire night, and there was only one person in the bar, and it was a girl.
Nice.
And at least
you got the one.
I know. And she danced her ass off in front of
yep.
us the entire night. It was the best thing in the world. It was just
Dude,
like this one lone dancing
man.
Girl dancing for us the entire night. It was the best.
I always tell people that, man, that like if I play a show and there's one person there, but they're loving the show, it's fine. I
yeah.
love it. I'm totally into that.
Right.
Or if there's like a total crowd and no one's listening, but there's like one guy who's listening in the front row, I'll play my ass off to that guy
yeah.
and it'll be totally worth it. You just need one person
that's into it.
Who gives a shit.
Exactly.
You know?
That
I
makes
say
all
that
the
on
difference.
This podcast,
yeah, you can
right?
say whatever the fuck you want, Pete.
Okay, good. Just making sure.
Yeah, you can say
I
whatever you want.
So, but I know you're on Radio Free Brooklyn. Now yeah. I don't want to break
it's
any
free.
Back.
It's free. So, you know, it's free as you get. So you can say whatever
Radio
you like.
Radio Free Speech Brooklyn.
Exactly.
Love it, man. Love Brooklyn, too.
Yeah. Whenever you come over, we'll hang out, play some music, get some beers. We'll hang out. So here you are. You're at New Paltz, and you meet up with Levon. Is that how it worked?
Yeah, I had graduated I really finished in the end of 99. In 2000, I was just doing my senior thesis performance
right.
for my jazz studies degree. And he played there that spring, I think it was, in May maybe. He was playing with a band called the Apple Pickers Union.
Cool.
And this was before he had his resurgence, and mm-hmm. he was just doing pickup gigs and stuff, and so he was available and he was walking around, and I went up to him and said, hey, you know, I'm recording this new record. Do you want to be a part of it? And he said, well, go talk to my manager. So I went and talked to his manager, got his info, and we were in touch for probably 2 years.
Awesome.
It was very difficult to move things forward. And finally, one day I get a phone call and says, hey, you know, how's next weekend look? Levon can come up. Let's do it. And sure enough, he showed up, and true gentleman, the nicest guy you've ever met, looks you right in the eye, firm handshake,
sure.
and just nailed it.
I bet. Canadian boy. He was a Canadian, right? Was he? He was from.
No,
he was the
from
Southern.
Arkansas.
Yeah.
The rest of the band
was from
Canada.
Yeah, yeah, totally. That's right. I couldn't remember which
Little
one it was. Yeah. So that's really cool. You got to that's wild that it took so long. So he came to you. You didn't go up to him to record?
Yeah, he came out to Boston.
Oh, wow.
We recorded this place called Wellspring Sound in Acton, Massachusetts. And he drove out from Woodstock, which from Woodstock would probably be, close to a 3-hour drive.
Yeah, that's a long way to go.
It was a good haul. He drove out with his manager, and we had a chef cater the event,
nice.
So he had some food there, and we
as
tried
you should.
To treat him best we could.
That's
and,
awesome.
Yeah, he smoked more weed than anyone I've ever met in my life.
That's awesome. Was, that's so good.
It was probably therapeutic because
sure.
you know he was going through some treatment. So,
right.
but still, either way, it was very impressive.
That's
that way.
That's amazing. So he's just sitting there getting high and like in between takes. Is that what he was doing?
Yeah, he'd go out to the car, you know, hang out for a little bit. And,
nice.
He was really good to us. I mean, we were young, you know, real young at the time.
Right.
And I was green. It was my first record, and I probably should have produced it, but I brought a producer in because
right.
I didn't know, you know, really what to do. And
sure.
after that experience, I produced all my other records, but, it was a very difficult situation because as involved as I was with the project, I was concerned about logistics and getting the charts performed properly
right.
and making sure the engineers were happy and
right.
the sound was good. And so I really didn't get a lot of time to talk to him. The rest of the band did. They all hung out with him, and I'm running around setting up mics and
sure.
Getting the guitar sounds and this and that.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
It was kind of sad that I really didn't get to spend a whole lot of time chatting. But
I mean, you got a recording of playing with him. I mean, that in itself is pretty cool. Did you get to play with him live and like just kind of like jam it out, or was it all recorded separately?
No. Yeah, it was live.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
We tracked live.
Did you feel that?
Funny story about it.
Go ahead.
I was under the impression that, you know, when you're in the studio, you use a click track because that's what I thought you did,
right.
you know?
Right.
And the engineers approved of that idea because we had some overdubs that we had to do. And, you know, they thought that was a good move too. And so we give him the click track. He puts on the headphones and he goes, I don't play to a click. And we were like, well, we kind of need the click. You know, that's what we're doing. It's part of the session. He's like, I'm not going to do it.
Not going to do it.
And they were like, well, they were coaxing it. The engineers are like, well, hey, man, can you just maybe just try it once? You know, put the headphones on.
That's amazing.
And begrudgingly, he's like, okay, all right, whatever. He puts the headphones on and he looks over and he gives me a wink. And while the engineers aren't looking, he pushes the headphones slightly back so that he can't really hear the click anymore. And then we start the tune, you know.
Yeah.
And they're telling him, you know, during the take, hey, you're off the click, you know. And we just played through it and played the track down.
That's amazing.
And he was saying that he likes the tune to move, you
yeah.
know. He likes to have the –
Yeah. I mean, that's what the band was all about. The band was all
yeah.
about moving. And he kept that moving, you know. Like, he
right.
was – that soul of that band. You know, I mean,
right.
They're all amazing, but like he's just so great at like conducting from behind yeah. that seat, you know?
Definitely. And he would push it, you know, and it felt good when he pushed it. Yeah. It didn't feel like someone was rushing the beat.
Right.
He would just give it that momentum to move the song forward, to give it energy, you know,
so
and vibe. And
that's really cool.
There's one of my favorite parts about the track that is on the new record, Tonight I'll Be Staying Here With You, is there's a break at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And when he comes back in, it's if there was a click, it would be a millisecond a little bit late.
Right.
But it just feels really good where he put that hit.
Yeah.
Because it leaves you hanging. It's the anticipation yeah. of like, oh, here it comes. Here, where is it? Oh, it's great. There it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what he did. He was playing with you and he wanted to make things happen, you know?
That's so cool. Did you feel that energy like playing with him? That kind of like that spirit of just kind of that whole like idea of the band and just that overall aura of what it meant, you know, to be in that time and all that stuff?
Well, definitely. I remember in the sound check, I was pretty nervous because I grew up listening to the band.
Sure.
And I told them the story about how when I was a really little kid, just barely able to stand, my parents put on Chest Fever, which has this enormous organ intro on it. And I remember just sort of being like overcome and like kind of scared, you know,
yeah.
at how big this sound is. And the right. drums come in and they're just like full of reverb and it's just gigantic yeah. sound. And it really took me over. And I asked him if he'd seen Bob recently. And he goes, oh, you mean Bob Dylan? And I was like, yeah, do you still see Bob around? He's like, yeah, I see him every now and then. And like I was trying to make conversation. I was so young, like I didn't know how yeah. to talk to people on that level.
No,
you're
a child.
So
you're
it was really awkward, but he treated me really well. He treated us like any other professional. Like
that's
if
really
he
cool.
was working with Bob Dylan, he treated us like he was working with Bob. You
right.
know?
Yeah, a musician is a musician to him. Yeah.
He could have been condescending or difficult and been like, oh, these kids don't know what they're doing.
Right.
You know,
this kid's running around. Yeah, exactly. He's running around putting mics up. What is he doing? Telling me to record
right,
to
right.
a click track. Shut up, kid.
I gotta go.
Exactly. That's just so cool. But now, since then, I mean, so first of all, where can they people get your new album?
Cool. Thanks for asking.
Sure.
It's on iTunes. You can just look up Pete Pigeon and Arcoda. Arcoda is what I call my band,
cool.
Although that is a very rotating lineup, A-R-C-O-D-A. It probably comes up as Pete Pigeon also.
Sure.
And Pigeon is P-I-D-G-E-O-N, which
like a little
gets
pigeon.
Misspelled
sure.
without the D a lot. Or just go to PetePigeon.com, which is even better.
Nice.
Because the sales on there go directly to me, and I don't have to pay the 40% on iTunes rate or whatever it is. And you can get vinyl.
Oh, cool.
I've got 180 gram gatefold full color vinyl.
Damn.
CD and all my other albums are up there too.
Nice. Who did you get to do the album art for it?
I did it.
Oh, you did it yourself?
I do everything.
Nice. It looks great. It looks really good.
I do the album art. I do the liner notes. I do the layout.
That's
the
so
design,
cool.
the photography. I produce the records. I hire all the lineup. I even bankrolled this one.
Damn.
It's nuts because the record industry is a whole nother convo.
Sure.
It's very dark.
It is very dark. So are you attached to anything right now, or are you just like doing your own thing?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Are you attached to any label right now, or are you just kind of doing
well,
your own thing?
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I finished the record and I started shopping the record around. And I talked to some very big labels. I don't need to name names, but
sure.
some of them were recording Levon's records before.
Mm-hmm.
And I got conversations with the A&R people and they said, hey man, this is an amazing record. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Levon sounds great. Everything's wonderful. But your social media numbers aren't in the right place. So
ugh.
We're going to pass.
Ugh.
And then
it's
I had
so
another conversation with Live Nation. Same thing.
Yeah.
Beautiful work. You're an amazing songwriter. Great voice. Social media numbers aren't there. Call us when you have like 100,000. And that takes 2-3 years of
yeah.
work or six figures in money.
Yeah.
I could buy all those numbers right now.
Yeah.
You know, I could just, if I had the money, I could call a dude. He could buy a bunch of likes. I could
yep.
fake it and I get the deal.
Ugh.
You know, But it's just a really, really sad state of the industry that it's the record labels have gone so down that they don't even care about the music anymore. It's just numbers.
Yeah, it's just numbers. It's really weird.
Even
that,
the A&R guys are getting frustrated.
Oh, I bet. I mean, they're trying to like pick up people that they like. They're going to shows. Right. They're saying, hey, I like this guy, but there's 20 people here. That ain't going to fly, so I got to let it go. Think about how many great artists we're going to lose because of that. You know what I mean?
All of them.
Yeah, all of them.
And the thing is, I had one A&R guy tell me that he quit a label because they had him sign an artist. The artist was an 11-year-old boy who had a YouTube channel that had tens of millions of followers, and his channel was throwing different foods at a wall and then laughing about it and seeing which foods like dripped down and which ones didn't. And they signed the kid because he had 10 million followers.
But what does that mean?
I was like, I can't do this anymore. No. F this. I'm out. You know?
Like, yeah, what is that going to do? What is he going to do? Throw shit against the wall and that's going to be your album?
Doesn't make sense. You get a Velveeta sponsor and then there's like,
so bad.
I don't know. It's just, it's so dark and it's very frustrating. I suffer with this every day. And it took me a long time, a couple months to digest that, I moved to LA so I could like meet all these people and like get in the scene. I thought talent was what it was about, and my bio and my history and working with big people. And it's not, it's at all.
It's all about numbers. So when did you get to LA?
What's that?
When did you get to LA?
Oh, I got here in December.
Okay.
So how you liking it? Pretty new. It was hard finding a stable place to live here. The rents are high. They're not as high as they were in New York, but the lifestyle here is great. I love the scene. The people are cool. The weather's awesome. I really dig it here.
Nice. That's really cool. So you're doing a bunch of stuff out there for, I think it was the Malibu Guitar Festival?
Yes. That was a great festival. That was last weekend. And it was actually almost a 2-week event. On Monday, what would that have been? Like the 13th, something like that.
Okay, so like 2 weeks ago, that makes sense.
Yeah, 2 weeks back. They open up the gallery. So they have a festival ground. It's spread out over a few venues. There's a festival ground where they have a main stage and a side stage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only open on Saturday. This was Saturday the 20th.
Okay, so like a week ago.
Yep, and then they have club shows at this place, Casa Escobar, in Malibu.
Cool.
And they had shows there Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. And then prior to that, they have a gallery, which is by the festival grounds.
Cool.
And it's an art gallery. They had work from Robbie Krieger and Pearl Thompson.
Nice.
Bunch of really amazing Don Mosier and pretty incredible stuff. And when the gallery opened that Monday, they had me and the Blue Dolphins, another duo come in and play. I did a duo set with Mark Hart, who's in Supertramp and Crowded House.
Cool.
And he was a real gentleman. We came in, we did some acoustic songs for about an hour.
That's cool.
And that opened the festival. We were the first act of the festival.
That's pretty amazing.
It was pretty cool. And then later that week, on Thursday, was when they had the benefit concert at Casa Escobar. Most of the festival is about benefits for local charities and stuff. And Chris Cornell had died that morning. About 1 in the morning, I'm ready to go to bed. I got a big day the next day. I want to get some sleep, And so about 1 in the morning, I got the news. And I stayed up until 4:30 in the morning, just playing songs and jamming.
Just hanging out by yourself? You're just hanging out by yourself in your hotel room?
And
just playing and learning a whole bunch of Soundgarden songs?
Yeah, well, just revisiting a bunch of stuff.
Totally.
And so I texted the founder, Doug DeLuca.
Yeah.
Founder of the festival, and said, hey man, I've been playing this song Say Hello to Heaven by Temple of the Dog forever. It would be great if we did a tribute tomorrow because a lot of people are hurting right now, and I think it would be a good release. So he said, all right, let's talk tomorrow. And so in the afternoon we connect and I say, I'm coming down, and I met up with him at the festival and he said, yeah, let's do it. You know, we'll fit it in.
Makes sense.
And it was amazing because they're already overbooked. They're running late. He fit it in and I did it. And I don't know if this is true, but I may have received the most press out of any artist on the event because of that.
That's awesome.
I had a full page article in Malibu Surfside News. I had a feature photo and an article in LA Excites.
That's amazing. All because of this benefit? All because of the benefit for Chris?
The tribute.
The tribute,
At the benefit, yeah.
Right.
And everyone's coming up to me and giving me hugs all weekend and saying, thank you so much for doing that. And it really took a big leap of faith for Doug to do that, of course,
totally.
You know, because it's unplanned and he doesn't know.
And it's a last minute thing, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was really, really, really amazing.
There's something about like that togetherness of grieving, especially with music, that really makes everyone pay attention. It makes the full page articles. It makes everyone come up to you at the end and hug you and like want to thank you for doing that and like really have been a part of something that like their past was, it was important to them and it shaped who they are and what they are and all that. And then to see you to be like, I was there too, man. I get it. And I'm going to play these songs in honor of that, of being there and living it and having that moment. And and then of course, then Greg Allman dies. I mean, I saw your post the other day on Facebook, pretty much saying like, first Chris dies and now Greg dies. This is just too much.
Yeah, and it was Colonel Bruce Hampton right before that, which was maybe 3 weeks earlier. And it's just been a really hard month because they're all people who meant immense, extremely influential in my career. Not some guy that I like, like some random musician. I like their songs. They were good, but like these people really changed who I am as a person and as a musician. They changed who I was socially, major, major folks. And just to have them all go back to back to back.
So terrible.
Man, it's been real tough, man.
It has.
So,
it has
and
been
I'm
real
not the
tough.
Only one, you know.
Obviously, exactly. And like, that's the thing. It's like, you look at something like the Greg Allman and then you look at something like Chris Cornell, they kind of like went over generations, but there was so much overlapping with those two and they're totally they're totally two different sounds. They're like way on the opposite ends of like, that idea of rock, they're like totally two different ends, but it touches a chord in so many different people. And, when they die so close together, you can't help just be like, come on.
well, the interesting thing about what you're saying there and what I've been thinking about is our conversation about record labels.
Yeah.
In that you need people who have access to this emotional content of music, not just the exterior of the music. So there's a lot of people who can just go out there. They have a good voice.
Yeah.
They can sing a song. Somebody else writes them a song. They sing the song. It sounds good. Mm-hmm. And they sell a record,
Right.
But you need guys, whoever, James Taylor or whatever, somebody who's, doesn't give a shit about anything other than playing that song with all the heart that they've got.
Right.
And you lose that when you get the kid. I mean, here's an example I gave somebody the other day. It's like, if I was going to spend $40,000 on a social media campaign,
right,
I could use that $40,000 to make another record.
Exactly.
Instead,
we're taking away from the art.
That record is now not going to come out and never exist because I spent all that money making social media numbers.
Exactly.
It's
and
bullshit.
What does that show in the end? Numbers? That's really all it shows. I mean, it's really hard. It's really hard to like be like, to be like, I really don't know where I'm going with it, but like to justify putting your money which place to go, because if you do it on your own, then you only get a certain amount of people who will listen to it. And
correct.
Then if you go to the other way, you're going to get a larger audience, but you're going to have less to show for it. You're going to have less less music to show for it. But the other interesting thing is I feel like there's got to be some, I mean, if you look at like, it was somewhere around, it was somewhere like late or early 2017 where records were outselling digital.
That's right.
So, like, I feel like there's a turning point. And then if you look back at, like, kind of that what you're talking about, the James Taylors and all that stuff, and if you look back on that, there was, like, this whole movement of, like, factories churning out songs for people who could sing, right?
Yep.
Motown right. and all that. And then came the James Taylors, the Paul Simons, the,
right.
you know, all those, that kind of group of people who were like, you know what, I could do this myself. Maybe right. I don't have, you know, the voice of whatever, but I'm going to do it myself and let's see what happens. And
well, you nailed it. Actually, Colonel Bruce Hampton was talking about that in an interview. He said that 1962 was like the shittiest year for music ever.
I believe it.
Like it was just rock bottom. There was no soul. There was no heart. It was just plastic music. You
yeah.
know? And he's like, then the Beatles came along and shook everything up.
Sure.
And then it was the Stones and then it was Zeppelin and so on down right. the line. And he's like, you know, this was an interview last year.
Yeah.
And he's like, I feel like we're at the end of one of these really shitty cycles now.
Yeah, I feel like you're right.
In the last 15 years, there's been absolutely nothing going on. He didn't say 15, but I feel like it's been 15.
Sure.
Like ever since really 2000.
Right.
And or maybe 2004, to be generous.
Yeah, I could give you like that 13 years, something like that. The really interesting thing is that when something happens musically, typically it happens in a group. Like you look at the late 60s, it was kind of like that hippie movement where everyone was kind of picking each other up, you know, and then you had the canyon sound where everybody was picking each other right. up. And like yep. it was just these groups of movements that kind of made the world pay attention to them. And I
right.
don't remember the last time. Like I feel like we're getting more and more away from that and like yeah. going, okay, I can make this album in my bedroom. You know, we're getting more
well,
and more away
made
from it.
Grunge
exactly.
is the Seattle scene. Like I was talking to my mom about this. Like the scene is what made Seattle.
Yeah.
Like
exactly.
when you had, you know, whatever, Mother Love Bone and Mudhoney and Alice in Chains and Soundgarden and Nirvana and the Temple of the Dog Project, Mad Season, like all these things, they
yeah.
were all collaborations.
Sure.
You know?
Exactly.
And you know, like Temple of the Dog was basically Pearl Jam before Pearl Jam featuring
yep.
Chris Cornell. So he kind of made Pearl Jam. Then Eddie Vedder came in and joined that group. And then he went and did or went back to Soundgarden. And, you know, Mad Season was like this collaboration thing
yep.
with some Pearl Jam guys and, you know, Screaming Trees guys. And so
Alice
that
Chains.
Network and that community,
right.
man.
Like, yeah, exactly. And I feel like there's got to be, and I feel like that's kind of why you move to Hollywood to find that kind of like, or at least I want you to go out there, Pete, and start the movement, you know, like go out there.
No pressure. I need you to go out to Cali and reinvent the music.
Reinvent everything. Just reinvent it all.
There's some truth to that. I mean, it's not like it hasn't crossed my mind that like, I need to do something here.
Yeah.
You know,
it's kind of been like, cause we both grew up in that grunge age where we saw movements and we saw the
right.
last real movement of kind right. of like a musical kind of thing, collaboration around, you know, social mental kind of state of music.
Yeah.
And it's always been like a thing of mine to be like, I just want to be a part of it. I just don't see it happening anywhere.
Well, after the grunge movement was the jam band movement, and the jam band movement was really happening 92 to 98,
yeah,
kind of.
Right.
And that was after grunge. I mean, grunge was what, like 88 to 92
right.
or something
but
like that.
But the interesting thing.
And then it was this
yeah.
jam band thing, but Horde Festival, you know, Blues Traveler, Dave Matthews Band, Fish.
Yeah, exactly. But it still had that like under, it wasn't like you looked at grunge and it was super pop culture. It was everywhere. It was everything and
right.
anything. And then the jam band scene came, but it was still back page to like Britney Spears.
That's correct.
You know,
yeah.
so it was never really like as big as it, but it did have a scene. It had a following enough
well,
to
it,
like.
It kind of did. I mean, it fostered Blues Traveler and Allman Brothers and Spin Doctors, and they were, you know, number one acts. You don't think about them as jam bands in 2017.
Right, exactly.
But back in the day, you know, Dave Matthews Band was on Horde Festival opening for Fish. So
yeah,
like,
exactly.
it was like, you know, a different thing. And then they got picked up by the labels and they sort of went their own directions
right.
and did
but
their
But it was
own
also
thing.
The last time where records and selling records meant something, you know, like,
that's right.
and then digital
that's
came
right.
and like, what does that mean anymore?
And then around the end of that period, there was a little Boston scene that was happening. Groups like Schleho and The Slip, Miracle Orchestra. Butch Trucks from the Allman Brothers picked those guys up, started a record label called Frog Wings. And they opened for the Allmans, and they were trying to push them out and get them out in front of people.
Right.
And it didn't take, and the label kind of fell apart.
But we need guys that, like that. You know, those guys to like...
Early 2000s, you know?
Yeah.
But so really, I don't think since 2004 I've seen anything. It's been very depressing.
It has.
That's when my career started.
Oh, no, Pete.
My first album was like 2002, you know? So like I've been in this void of like, hey, guys,
well, me, I'm here.
I'm over here.
I'm here.
Anyone? Anybody?
I'm over here. Oh, man. Well, Pete Pigeon is in Hollywood, but in studio hanging out with us. You can go to iTunes, look at Pete Pigeon, or you can go to PetePigeon.com and buy his album. It's pretty amazing. It's got Levon Helm on there. It's got a bunch of awesome other musicians and dudes out there making it on his own, doing it. I love
it. The only way, man.
I love it. So what's up ahead? What do we got coming on soon?
Let's see. We're doing... some shows here in LA.
Cool.
I'm putting together an album launch party for LA, which I haven't done yet. That'll probably be late July. I'm looking at Lucky Strike Hollywood right now. They put on a show with me and Mark Hart a few Mondays ago. And actually, now that I think of it, it wasn't a Monday I played that gallery show, but not that anyone knows.
Doesn't,
it was a Monday that we played Lucky Strike, so I don't remember.
Doesn't matter.
You doesn't
played
really
it.
Matter.
You played it. It's in the past. It was awesome. Let's move on.
So we got that coming up. I've got some Denver shows coming up.
Oh, you're going back to Denver?
July 15th, I'll be playing the Joyride Brewing Anniversary Party with my band Funk. We played the last couple of years. Great dudes, really cool community-based brewery.
Nice.
Grant and Nathan and all those guys, really good people. It's right in Edgewater, which is this little community on the west side of Denver that overlooks a lake, and it's
very
Sloan
cool.
Lake. I used to live right there when I was living in Denver. I lived two blocks from the brewery.
Nice. That's awesome. Do you miss it? Do you miss Denver?
What's that?
Do you miss Denver?
No. I mean, I do in some respect. I miss certain things, but Denver got dark. Denver was Denver's an interesting place. When I moved there, which was in August of 2014, it was a pretty vibrant scene. There was a club called The Armory, which was run by Brian Davis. And he had a night Wednesdays, which was the funk night.
Okay.
And my friend from New York, Eric Ambrosciano, he played in Arcoda once. He played drums on one of the gigs. We got to know each other, and he sort of took me under his wing when I moved to Denver, introduced me to this session, put me on a couple of the gigs, and then I became the house guitar player for 2 years at
the
club.
That's pretty awesome.
And it was like a home. It was like a home away from home, and all the musicians in town would come out and sit in and
That's
jam.
Awesome.
And anybody who moved to town knew that this was the spot to go. If you're a new resident of Denver and you play bass, you go to the session, you meet players, you get integrated into the scene, and then you find bands and so forth.
Sounds like sounds like you're making it happen there. What happened?
What happened? Definitely. Right. Well, then the venue got bought out by the parent company. They shut it down and turned it into one of those like $14 hipster whiskey bars, you know? Painted the whole thing black, no live music, just killed everything.
Oh, that sucks.
And at the same time, a few other clubs closed out. Park House closed down. One Up, which was the jam band club in town, closed down. A couple of smaller things closed down. And the scene really took a huge hit. And it just wasn't exciting anymore. There's also not much of a singer-songwriter thing there. There's a... the Colorado Sound is a radio station in Denver, and they do some great work. They're really trying to push that singer-songwriter scene there.
Cool.
But it's very difficult.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're doing now, but they're great people, and you know, God bless them for making the fight. But it wasn't taking when I was there. And it was really tough. It's a jam band and jam band only town. If you play jam band, you could headline Red Rocks tomorrow and sell 9,000 tickets. outside of Denver, no one knows who you are.
Yeah, totally.
And it's I don't know. I like jam band music, yeah, but I don't play that anymore.
Right.
It's not my thing. You yeah. know? So it just wasn't the right fit for me.
So you moved to LA. Now we're gonna find you a place where you can be the house musician and start a scene
great,
there.
Right.
We need you to start a scene there and make it happen.
Well, the thing that's amazing is that there's a place called the Baked Potato here, which is in Studio City, and it's the equivalent of what the Armory was doing. They have a funk night,
nice,
but a funk fusion night. And the difference is that when you go to the Baked Potato, you get your ass handed to you. Like, these are dudes that are, you know, toured with Zappa Plays Zappa,
yeah,
and Tool, and like major, major heavy dudes. And like, you can go see Vinnie Caliuta sit in there sometimes, Sting's drummer, you know,
it's pretty awesome,
play with Zappa, and like major, major dudes.
Mm-hmm.
And you get your jaw drops, and that's what I find exciting, is I can go in there and be like, wow, I need to go home and practice,
yeah,
right now.
Right,
and that's
right.
exciting as a musician, you know?
Yeah, totally. To get inspired in that way. Yeah, to be inspired in that way, to be like, I want to play now and I want to learn something.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. I get that. I totally get that.
And people like Stephen Thurston and Corey Baker and some of the other guys, even Mark Donovan, who's now playing keyboards instead of guitar, they all kind of bounced from the scene a little bit, and it
yeah.
was just deflating rather than inflating. You
yeah,
know?
Totally. Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough world out there, Pete, but you're trudging along, and I'm proud of you. And
I
wish we got to play some songs, but next time, let's hook it up. We'll get some. We'll get you a mic over there, and we'll get you to play some songs. I wanted to hear Melissa, but next time we'll play a little Melissa. I do have one story that I heard, which was one of my favorite stories. I think it was Buddy Guy. I'm 99% sure it was Buddy Guy. But Buddy Guy was talking about how he was doing a gig down in Georgia, and he flew down there, and he's like, his boys were like, you got to hear these guys. I got you a ticket. We're going to go see the Allman Brothers. And he's like, he said he was driving down the road, down the highway, top down, just blaring Allman Brothers. And he was like, this is the most amazing shit I've ever heard in my entire life. These boys got more soul than anybody ever. And he
right.
gets there, and they come on and they start jamming. And he's like, wait a minute. This is a bunch of white boys? This is it, right? He had no idea because he'd never heard of them before. He just listened to them, was like, no way. These could be a bunch of little white boys. And
it
just blew him away. And I mean, that's the Allman Brothers, you know? They
Dude,
were just so good.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Man, that's a great story.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was Buddy Guy. I have to
right,
check into that, but I'm pretty sure
yeah,
it was Buddy.
Yeah, it sounds like Buddy Guy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
He's on the level.
Well, Pete, thanks for coming on, buddy. Let's do this again soon. Let's catch up.
Yeah, that hour flew by.
It does. It does fly by. It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll do it anytime, man. Just let me know.
It's been
rough getting in touch with you guys with all the moves and everything. So,
I know. And just email. Just,
you want to have me
just
on,
text
me,
and I'll make sure it happens. Giggles, you know, like, he's not even here. You know, like, come on. This is terrible. All right. Well, good seeing you. I'll talk to you soon. Good luck. And go to PetePigeon.com. Listen to his new album. It's pretty awesome.
Yes, sir. Thank you so
Thanks,
much,
buddy.
Man. Keep up the great show.
You too. All right. I'll talk to you later.
See you, brother.
Later. And what do we got coming up? Collision. Can't hear you. Can't hear you. We got 20 seconds left. One mic is up. Try that one. I don't know why that one's not
one. Is this the one?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay. All right, so we got Collision Time Revisited, and we'll be featuring bands playing Brooklyn's Northside Festival next week.
Or oh, cool. That's next week?
Yeah. It is June 7th through 11th.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. I love it. I love that festival. Later, boys.